Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host. Governments today face serious, seemingly intractable public management issues that go to the core of effective governance and leadership, testing the very form, structure, and capacity required to meet these problems head-on. Today, most effective government leaders can spark the imagination to look beyond the day-to-day urgencies and reflect on the serious problems and critical challenges they face. Leaders are responsible for envisioning, shaping, and safeguarding the future, creating clarity amidst uncertainty. This is no small feat, and it is made increasingly difficult in the 21st century, where rapid, unforeseen change seems to be the only constant. What is the mission of the State of Ohio Leadership Institute? How is it developing the next generation of Ohio's elected state and local leaders? I'll explore these questions and so much more with Trevor Brown, Executive Director of the State of Ohio Leadership Institute and Dean of the John Glenn College of Public Affairs at The Ohio State University. Trevor, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks. It's good to see you again.
So, Trevor, would you tell us more about the mission of the State of Ohio Leadership Institute?
It's very simply to develop the next generation of state and local elected leaders in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. When did it start? And more importantly, what prompted its creation?
It's a pretty remarkable guy, the current Speaker of the House in Ohio, a gentleman named Cliff Rosenberger, a very young man, second youngest speaker in the history of Ohio, and at one point in time, the youngest speaker in the country. He's in his mid-30s. And interestingly, was coming to the end of his term and thinking about what kind of impact did he want to have beyond his time in office. And interestingly, he reflected on his own personal circumstances. Here he was, the youngest person in this role in a long, long time, and yet he was going to have to leave. And why was that? It's term limits. And his insight was that term limits had really reduced the ability of the legislature to play its role as a co-equal branch of government. Term limits had ceded power to the executive branch, and interestingly, to lobbyists. They were the enduring institutional memory of the state of Ohio, and not the citizen legislators that term limits were supposed to bring into office, which they did. And so I think in a perfect world, maybe we'd get rid of term limits, but those are constitutionally enshrined now. The state of Ohio embarked on those in the early 1990s, and I don't think there's any great push to get rid of them. And so the next best thing he could envision was creating a resource for that next generation of leaders moving into elected office to prepare them for the magnitude of their role. So he wanted to place this in a university because he thought that would be an enduring institution that was neutral and a third party and would be respected by that next generation of leaders coming into these elected roles.
Is it just elected officials, or are you also working with appointed officials too?
So the aspiration is to serve both,
okay,
elected and appointed. Because it's the state legislature that's provided us this funding, we see those as our principal client, so to speak. But over time, as we deliver more programming, the hope is to expand that to reach as many people who are new to their roles, inclusive of the staff. Mm-hmm. We often neglect the staff when we think about the infrastructure of leadership that goes around with elective service. It's not simply the person who was nominated and appointed or elected. It's their staff as well.
How did you get funded?
So Speaker Rosenberger and his role as the Speaker of the House oversees the legislative process around the biennial budget in the state of Ohio. He worked this through the state budget, and so it is an authorization and contribution from the state to start this. But we also brought other resources to bear in this as well. The university, through the Glenn College, where this will be its home, has provided some resources as well, and we will seek out philanthropic resources too.
So as you're building the institute, what are some of the key leadership programs you're offering?
So we are in the development phase, and the first programming will roll out this summer. The first is a leadership academy. It will be residential on the campus of Ohio State University, taking elected officials out of their day-to-day life. We're going to do it in the summer when it's not the thick of the governing process. The state legislature session will be over then. And the idea is to take them away from the immediate requirements of serving their constituents, and get them to reflect, be on campus, put them in experiences where they're with their peers at the state and local level. It'll be a mix of state and local, and with experts, both academics and practitioners. So one part will be this residential leadership academy. A second part of this is a series of conferences, symposia, bringing thought leaders together to both share lessons learned, but also broadcast out to the broader citizenry about the good work that we're doing. Part three will be trying to get young people engaged, a mission that we in higher ed have all the time, but fortunately the speaker saw this as an important build the pipeline, right? And so it's getting high school students and college-age students not just interested in public service, which is, again, a mission we have in the college, but in elective service. This is an era where lots of people who used to think of serving their constituency, it's not on their radar. Perhaps it's the divisiveness of politics. Perhaps it's the intrusion into your personal life that comes with running for office. All those things are still present, but we need young people to be thinking about this as a not necessarily a career, but as a part of their public service. And then there's a fourth part that we will develop, which is a series of training modules in key areas, ethics, the budget process, key policy areas, health policy, trying to get resources in front of these decision makers in ways that they can consume it efficiently. Could be in-person training, could be online, could be podcasts, could be a variety of ways to convey information to them.
And what do you see are the benefits of these tracks?
So I think the most fundamental is that leadership training raises people's horizons. Just the act of inviting someone or asking them to apply gets them thinking beyond just, what do I need to do today to advance my career? Oh, I'm a leader. I am here to represent a broader set of interests than just myself. And so just participating in leadership training really raises people's sights and gets them thinking longer term, temporally, what's going to happen down the road. But also horizontally, if I'm an elected official, I don't just represent the 51% that voted for me. I represent all of my constituents. So that's the most fundamental value of this. More practically, it will put them in a room with or put them in contact with thought leaders and people who are experts in this area, whether by virtue of having served in positions like this before or they're academics who've thought a lot about this and done analysis. And then you're building a network. You're building a peer network of others in similar positions, going through similar experiences. And one of the things we know from years of personal experience and from research is that to be an effective leader is not just a singular personal activity. It's building a network of people who can support you. I can call them up on the phone and say, I've got this problem. Can you just listen to me for a little while I talk through this? And then they offer those lessons that they've learned. And so that's going to be a tremendous benefit of this as well.
So I know you're fairly new. You're in your infancy as the Institute, right? But if I won a special election or something like that, and I really am coming to government with no background in government per se, How would I participate in the Academy? What's the process?
So the Academy will be an application-driven process. We're going to start small. This summer will be our beta test, so to speak.
Okay.
Yep, this will be our first one. And so we're looking at somewhere in the high teens to low 20s to build a small,
intimate network.
And start small and then hopefully grow it over time. But that will be an application-based process. The training modules I described to you, the array of different, that's going to be openly available to anyone. So imagine an online website with a portfolio of training opportunities available to you. You can grab a document or a PowerPoint or listen to a podcast. That'll be available to anybody. And our job will be to make that engaging, exciting, accessible, and fundamentally tailored to their needs. Sometimes in the academic environment, we think, well, we know how best to convey content, and we fail to listen to those who actually have to consume the content. And one of our principles will be to make sure that this is delivered in a way that's usable for those who need it.
So, you know, when you were setting up the mission and the focus of the Institute, you had to have recognized, and I know from our other previous conversations that you do. I'd like to delve into some of the core leadership challenges being faced, particularly at the state and local levels, and maybe beyond Ohio, if you wanted to.
And when we say beyond Ohio, sometimes that I'll oversimplify, and every state is different, and every situation is different. But as a general rule, I think there are a series of things that are facing state and local officials that are challenging. Number one, as I mentioned earlier, the complexity of government is increasing. It's not decreasing. Part of that's driven by the demands of the citizenry. The history of democratic governance is not to reduce our wants, it's to increase them. We've opened a process where we ask the people, what do they want and need? And they ask for more, typically. And it's not so much they want to consume more, it's that they want our governments to handle increasingly complex challenges. Safety and security in schools right now is the hot button issue at the state and local level. And while we've boiled it down to gun rights versus mental health issues or whatever it is a tremendously complex equation. Schools were set up initially to provide education. They now provide an array of services, from healthcare for some people to sustenance in the form of food. And now there is a responsibility to keep people safe, which was never an expectation when you and I went to school. We just presumed that it was happened. So the requirements of governance have just gotten more complex. And trying to understand that systemic nature of all these public problems is something that a newly elected official has to get up to speed much quicker. A second is that, and I don't think this is the fault of the actual participants. I think generally the people that run for public office are value-driven. They want to make a difference in the world. At Senator Glenn's funeral a year and a half ago, Vice President Biden was kind enough to come and share some thoughts. And he was asked to reflect on his sort of tutelage under Senator Glenn. Senator Glenn was sort of a generation ahead of him. He said, Senator Glenn and other senators of his ilk said, you should always question the position of your opponents, those on the other side of the aisle, but you should never question their motives. Mm. They're there for good reasons, right? So I think people come into office as value-driven people, but the incentives right now are to promote divisiveness, right? The way that elections are constructed, whether it's the way that districts are organized and the way that primaries are run, the incentives are to divide rather than to come together. And so a challenge that we face at the state and local level, just as we see here in the nation's capital, is how do we get people to figure out how to compromise? That doesn't mean they have to necessarily forego their value-driven positions, mm-hmm. but how do we get them to come together and come up with compromise solutions so we can move forward on some of these challenging issues? That is a phenomenon that occurs across the states and the localities. And it's increasing, right? I mean, the divisiveness of campaigns and the kind of toxicity of our public discourse is not diminishing. It's getting worse. And yet we still have to make decisions that advance our public ends.
I wanted to talk about how the Institute would remedy some of those issues. And it looks to me that they'll provide the tools, the insight for when these folks are elected on how to govern and manage the state the most effectively. Is that kind of where?
Yeah, I think there's a series of approaches. Number one is there are some tools. We'll be partnering with some other organizations that have really done some great work in this. I'd highlight the National Institute for Civil Discourse, a really phenomenal organization that is developing programs for state and local officials to figure out how to operate in a bipartisan fashion, right? And so there are some tools and techniques in compromise and conflict negotiation and listening and then moving forward to a decision while taking into account the position of the other side. That's part of it, right? Some sort of explicit training in how to negotiate. But there's also some more implicit approaches, namely getting people in a room that disagree with each other and building their personal relationships. So when I talked about the network earlier, this is the long-term goal. And we in universities think long-term. It's not the next election cycle that we're worried about. It's the next generation that we're worried about. And so what we're hoping is, not in the first 2 years, but in the first 10 years, that you get a sufficient volume of people through the program who are building personal connections across their divisions, that they learn. It's not so much that they learn how to get along. They already know how to get along, yeah. Right? Interpersonally, people are really good at this most of the time. But they forget when they walk into their positions. But then if I look across the aisle and say, oh, Michael, I remember we had a beer together, or we went for a walk together and we talked about our families or whatever it is. Then I remember, oh, you're not a Republican or a Democrat. You're just a person who wants to do good in the world. So that'll be a part of this as well. And then a third piece of this will be, as universities have done for generations, and programs in public affairs and administration and public policy are committed to, is making fact-based, objective decisions, right? Gathering information to use that as the basis for why you voted one way or another. Now, you always have to account for the politics of your district or whatever your elected position may be, but you need to balance that with what's the objective information about the circumstances. And I think the pendulum has swung at this moment too far towards the dynamics of the political environment to the neglect of what we think of as fact-based objective analysis. And one of our jobs is to try and move that pendulum, not all the way back, but towards how do we balance these factors.
What leadership qualities are essential for government leaders? We'll explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.